Siding Unlimited, named the best window installers, not just here, but in the whole USA. Get the best. Siding Unlimited, 5-time winner as America's best window installer. For windows you call Siding Unlimited, first and directly, SidingUnlimited.com.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios in downtown Milwaukee, it's Wisconsin's Midday News, making stories come to life. Now, here are your hosts, Jessica Tai, and in for Greg Matzik, it's Adam Roberts.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. We've got a big show on the way here. The stakes are high in the federal case against Milwaukee County Circuit Judge Hannah Dugan. It is now day 3 of testimony. We'll get you an update on who's taking the stand today and discuss the odds of Dugan testifying in her own defense. Plus, the Packers stumbled in Denver. Now they're headed straight into a primetime battle with the Bears. Is there real reason for concern? Or is this still Green Bay's division to lose? We'll check in with Packers beat writer Jason Wilde. But first,
it's now at noon on Wisconsin's Midday News.
We're just about 20 minutes away from Milwaukee Public Schools announcing a major update on the district's lead stabilization work. The district has been working for more than 10 months to eliminate lead dangers from nearly 100 schools across the city of Milwaukee. The superintendent, the mayor, and the city health commissioner are all on hand for this big announcement. While they haven't officially revealed the big news yet, we can tell you this. I went to the district's website right before the show and looked up the progress reports. All school buildings are now cleared of lead hazards. That's ahead of schedule. Great news. Earlier this year, the district completed its first goal. Adam, you'll remember this. It was to clear all buildings built before 1950 that serve elementary students. The second goal, with a deadline of December 31st, was to clear all buildings built before 1978 that serve elementary school students. On the district's website, there's a column for schools that have been cleared of lead hazards and a column for schools that still have work in progress. All schools now in that cleared column.
That's incredible, considering how quickly we've kind of turned things around since Superintendent Caselli started back in March.
Yeah, and this is a huge deal, too, because it's a lot of work. I mean, it's about the health of the kids. It's about the health of the staff. It's a lot of work. Those schools had to be cleared by the Milwaukee Health Department. So this is a big and important update for MPS and the district's kids.
What does the future look like for public affairs broadcasting in Wisconsin? Well, water's a little bit murky on that front right now. You may recall the story from last month. Wisconsin Eye, which for 18 years has essentially functioned as Wisconsin's version of C-SPAN, they went dark this past Monday due to a lack of funding. So all that archive footage and any videos of government activities at the state capitol, that's now not available. Well, a group of Democratic lawmakers now are pushing to fund a replacement product. Under the democratically authored plan, the Office of the Public Affairs Network would be created and tasked with providing unedited live video and audio. They'd receive $2 million a year in state tax dollars from the general fund to fund their operations. I spoke with one of the authors of the bills a few moments ago, Senator Mark Spreitzer of Beloit. He tells me finding a WSI replacement will be a top priority for the state Senate to begin 2026.
I think there's bipartisan interest to do something to preserve public coverage of government meetings, but I don't know that there's agreement right now on what that should look like. This has to be the number one item on the agenda when we come back in January, is making sure that everything else we do in January is actually available to the public to watch.
Last month when I spoke with WSI CEO John Hinkes, he told me the organization was working to lower a match requirement, receive an endowment from the state to continue their operations, but that work has not progressed. In fact, they only had raised about $250,000, and that was used to cover some of their outstanding costs. The new office would also need to find a way to get all of that archived content that's currently offline. It is currently slated to transfer to the State Historical Society if WSI permanently shuts down. So we'll continue following this story very closely as we head into 2026.
That's a lot of historical content. I'd love to know the numbers and how many people were actually watching some of those feeds and taking a look at the video. I feel like here in news, we do that. But
every
for
day.
You, our fans, the general public, I'm kind of curious how many of you actually paid attention to Wisconsin Eye. Well, coming up, President Trump delivers a primetime address to the nation tonight. He'll be coming to you live from the White House starting at 8. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt says the president will discuss his accomplishments since taking office and what he plans to do over the course of the next 3 years. The president has been working to highlight his record heading into what's expected to be a tough midterm election year. You can hear the president's address live right here on 620 WTMJ starting at 8 tonight. It is right now, 12:14. Coming up, a first place showdown in Chicago, a tough loss in Denver, injuries just piling up. What does it all mean for the Packers right now? Packers beat writer Jason Wilde joins us next with what fans need to know heading into Saturday night.
Hey, it's WTMJ's Greg Matzik here for Flanner's Home Entertainment. Does the audio and video system in your home need an upgrade? Well, Flanner's has all the solutions and the installation experts to simplify and upgrade your home entertainment experience. Forget about the impersonable big box stores and risky online purchases. You go with locally owned Flanner's, where quality service, the best brands, and guaranteed best price remain top priorities. Stop by Flanner's in West Dallas, Grafton, or at Flanner's.com. Sound advice at the best price, just press play.
Now at Noon is sponsored by Flanner's Home Entertainment. Visit them at Flanner's.com. Sound advice at the best price, just press play.
It's time to gear up for your football fix on Wisconsin's Midday News with Greg Matzik and Jessica Tai.
But what it boils down to is this. Saturday's game against the Bears, you really get the feeling it's for the division.
Powered by Flanner's Home Entertainment. Just press play.
Green Bay Packers are gearing up for a first-place showdown with the Chicago Bears. Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Well, yes, it does.
We were just saying that a couple weeks ago. It is going to be a huge game in Chicago Saturday night, especially after the Packers' loss in Denver. Not only did we lose the game, we lost a few players to injuries. Let's check in live with one of the best beat writers in the business. It's Jason Wilde from Wilde & Tausch on ESPN Milwaukee. You can also hear his great work on channel3000.com. We have so much to talk about today, Jason.
We do indeed. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so I mentioned losing players to injuries. I'll tell you what, I looked at the injury report last night. It is like a long receipt from CVS. It just goes on and on and on.
There's no coupons at the bottom, though.
Right, no coupons. I don't like it. Micah Parsons, probably the toughest one to swallow here. He's out for the season after tearing his ACL on Sunday. But if you take Micah out of the equation, whose injury are you most concerned about right now?
Yeah, great question, and it's not even close. It's Christian Watson, who is practicing on a limited basis today, like 3 days after he was in the hospital in Denver being checked out for the chest injury he suffered. So he is out there running routes. He will hopefully get to talk to him after practice today. So he is practicing. Dontavian Wicks, another wide receiver who's been battling an ankle injury, he's out there practicing. Lucas Van Ness, who came back after missing 7 of the last 8 games, he's out there practicing. The players that aren't, Josh Jacobs taking another day off, but he's pretty convincing when he said yesterday he plans on playing through the pain like he has for most of the year. Safety Evan Williams is not practicing. Zach Tom, their starting right tackle, also not practicing. That is a concern about his availability. We'll see how things change, if at all, tomorrow. But having Christian Watson back out there after the pain that he appeared to be in when he hit the deck on that interception that Jordan Love threw to Patrick Surtain, that is really good news if you're a Packers fan today.
You mentioned the short timetable from when Christian was injured Sunday, now seemingly back out there hoping to give it a go, and Jacobs playing through seemingly every injury he's suffered, minor or major, this season. Jason, how much does that speak to just the pressure that not just players, but teams' health staffs are under to make sure that if there's any chance these guys who get paid a lot of money to get out there and play football are ready to go?
Yeah, great question. And let's be honest, there are certain guys that are not a challenge at all. Like if they're not 100%, they're not going to play. And one of the things that Doc McKenzie, who is now kind of moved into an emeritus role with Dr. Michael Ryan now as the team doctor. But Doc McKenzie would always say, a lot of times you have to protect these guys from themselves, right? Because a lot of them are fierce competitors. They want to play through injury. The good news about Christian Watson, and look, no doctor. I'm no expert on medical things because that is not something that I'm smart enough to be, much to my parents' disappointment. But I would say that the Hippocratic Oath, right? Do no harm. You got to make sure that these guys are medically cleared to play. And if they are, then the decision becomes how effective can they be? And if it's an injury that they're not going to do further damage to, like in Josh Jacobs' case, right? He's got a bone bruise on his knee. It's painful. It swells up during the course of the game. it is not a pleasant experience for him. But all the rest of all the ligaments are structurally sound. There's no concern on the medical part staff about the weakening of that knee and causing a, say, an ACL tear, because then they wouldn't let him out there. He's just one of those guys that wants to play through everything, and with the exception of that Minnesota game leading into Thanksgiving against the Lions, he has played through everything. So we'll see what Christian Watson can do, but the most important thing was he went to the hospital. He did not have any internal injuries, which is what you fear when a guy's announced with a chest injury, and that's the most important thing. So the fact that he's out there, I think he's probably going to have a little bit of, you know, trouble with functionality in his shoulder, but if he thinks he can go, Christian Watson's going to go.
Do you have an update yet on when Micah Parsons is having surgery? I guess he's waiting on two major events right now because he's about to have another baby, the birth of his new baby,
yeah,
and then he's got this major
crazy
surgery.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you can have it at the same hospital and then you're conveniently located, just switch floors.
Somebody wheels you up to the next floor.
Right, maternity ward, the general surgery. Matt LaFleur was light on details. He has not had the surgery yet. He was also not clear on who would perform the surgery, whether it's the Packers team doctor or if it'll be someone else. I mean, again, Micah Parsons was traded to the Packers on August 28th. He never even got to really move any of his stuff. I think his girlfriend is still down there. I think he's been renting out various Airbnbs and just moving or from one to another. At least that was the last time. You know, he did talk about how he and his girl, as he called her, are hyper competitive when they play board games. But he's had a lot on his plate, and now obviously with the injury, figuring out when the swelling is down enough for him to have the surgery. I know Patrick Mahomes already had his surgery, I believe. So it all depends on a case-by-case basis there.
I'm curious as to which board games Micah Parsons is playing. Like, I just want that visual of, you know, big Micah Parsons sitting down with a board game in front of him.
Flipping the Monopoly board over.
I don't think it's been, I feel like Monopoly takes way too long. But
we've
got to find out that answer. Okay, so I also...
I actually have that answer.
Oh, you do? Oh, tell us.
So he went through the various games that he really enjoys playing. He admits that he's a prima donna when it comes to that. His favorite game apparently is Scattergories and Taboo. Those are the top two for him.
Really?
He also claims to be undefeated over the past 5 years in Connect Four.
Oh, Connect Four, that's a good one. People love that. I'm a little surprised about Taboo. It feels a little old school, I guess, Taboo. But okay, thank you for that answer. Hey, speaking of Micah Parsons, I saw he put out a message on social media saying, "I may be sidelined, but I am not defeated. This injury is my greatest test. I will rise again." Do you think he rises again just as good? And do you think he'll miss any of next season? I feel like these guys, a lot of them seem to be healing more quickly. We know he's out for this season, but is any of next season possibly impacted?
There is some danger with the timing. There's no doubt about it. The fact that it happened when it did. You know, Christian Watson came back pretty quickly from his injury. He suffered his ACL tear on January 5th. He played in his first game this season on October 26th. Okay, so that's, what is that, 9.5 months to get back to game action. Certainly that would be the hope here. And if that's the case, that kind of puts, you know, Micah Parsons into week 2, 3, 4, somewhere in that window of next season. I was looking up Adrian Peterson, who back in 2012 came back from an ACL tear that he suffered on Christmas Eve the previous season, and he was ready for opening day, and not only was he ready, but he ran for over 2,000 yards that season and won the MVP. So it has been done. Clearly, Micah Parsons is an athletic freak, so I'm eager to see what he's capable of doing. But, you know, that's just terrible. Like, he was having such a great year, and now he's obviously got to go through a very long and arduous journey to get back.
Okay, I don't know if you can answer this in one word or at least 15 seconds here, but how much pressure is on Jordan Love in this moment? He didn't look so great in that second half against the Broncos.
No, but he looked great in the first half. I would say there is certainly some additional pressure, but he can't try and be a hero. He can't play Superman. He's got to be himself, but elevate his game slightly.
Love it. That's Jason Wilde every Wednesday right here in Wisconsin's Midday News. Thanks, Jason.
All right, everybody, take care. Be good.
The Football Fix, sponsored by Flanners Home Entertainment. Visit them at flanners.com. Sound advice at the best price. Just press play. Fails us with his exceptional reporting and his knowledge of 90s R&B. It's CBS Justice correspondent Scott McFarlane. Hi there, Scott.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for Erykah Badu, and thanks for both of you for welcoming me on.
Ooh, Erykah Badu. She's good. I didn't know this one, though. It's definitely a tune. Gets you kind of tapping your toes.
97. Bank on it.
Look at him. Always so impressive. Scott, you were here in the city back in May when Milwaukee County Circuit Judge Hannah Dugan pleaded not guilty to federal obstruction charges. Now here we are. It is day three of testimony in this high-profile trial. Judge Dugan, of course, accused of helping a man who was in the country illegally evade immigration agents at the courthouse in April. We have heard from members of the arrest team, including FBI agents. We've heard from fellow judges. Do you think we'll hear from Dugan? Will she take the stand and explain her side?
Well, of course, she has the right not to. We all know that. Whether she does so or not can sometimes be a mid-trial strategy. You know, the defense can get a sense, Jess, of where things are going and whether they need to put somebody on the stand and expose them to unpredictable cross-examination, which can be problematic for any number of reasons. This trial is going a bit longer than I think some people might have expected when they first saw this case surface in May. Such a point-blank case, such a simple allegation here, but they've really tried to support it with a lot of witnesses, and that doesn't mean the jury is being more convinced. Just because you throw a lot of witnesses at something doesn't mean you're making a more compelling case. You'll remember, though, the initial trial date on this case was for mid-July. Now, federal cases don't move that fast, but having this in December is earlier than some of us thought as well, that there might be more pretrial arguments and motions. They've got this thing right there in the hands of a jury now with the fate of a local judge in their hands.
Is it reasonable to ask if the impending holiday has anything to do on how quickly either side may be wanting to move through? I know you have to obviously approach all angles of a case and you have this lengthy list of witnesses that are going to be called. But is that timeline affected by all at all by where in December this trial is happening?
Generally speaking, yes. The holidays are almost like a dead end for juries across America, cases big and small, federal and local. It doesn't give anybody an advantage, but yeah, jurors are humans, and this is not exactly a quiet time of year for most of us. We're pretty darn busy right now, weekends, weekdays, nights, and jurors have lives, and jurors, if they see a declarative way to go in the jury room, may, when they get this case, see the holiday deadline as an urgency to come out with an answer. But you can't predict juries. You can't know what they're going to do, which is always the risk of a trial. It's always the leverage the federal government wields to try to get plea agreements. But this case was never going to be pleaded out. There's a fundamental issue here, a fundamental issue about separation of powers, about the executive branch reaching into the judicial branch, according to Judge Dugan's team. And I don't think this case was ever going to be stopped short of a trial.
We did get a little update just before noon on the timeline here. The prosecution says they plan to wrap up their case this afternoon. We'll see how quickly it moves after that. Scott, what happens if Judge Dugan is convicted? And then on the flip side, if she's acquitted?
Well, I think you could bet the farm on an appeal. I mean, that's pretty much the muscle memory of federal criminal defense, is look for issues with the jury instructions, look for issues in the trial to compose an appeal. You could guarantee that. If she is convicted, also, it's worth noting this is not a violent crime. This is not a crime of violence. This is not somebody who has a criminal history. It seemed preposterous to think about prison sentences in the sentencing memorandum. Well, that's kind of premature because this case hasn't gone to the defense yet, nor has it gone to a jury. But we are talking about a federal felony, which is not an insignificant thing.
Scott, it's interesting as I've watched how media coverage of this trial in particular has unfolded. Obviously, here in Milwaukee, it's leading most newscasts. You have every outlet, including ourselves, with a body at the federal courthouse. And I know that this case has drawn attention across the country, but it doesn't seem like we're getting those outside the courthouse updates from some of the major network outlets. I know that once we get towards verdict day, that may change. But is that a little surprising in your eyes that we're not seeing at least maybe an uptick in coverage nationally, considering how much this could have implications for?
It doesn't surprise me, Adam, not because the case is anything short of significant, and if not historic, a transcendent case across America with a judge being prosecuted by the federal government for what she did in her courtroom. But it's the federal court system, and the hurdle for the federal court system has always been and remains to this day the prohibition on cameras and audio. You cannot hear what happens in this historic trial. You certainly can't see what happens in this historic trial. The federal government, by having a nationwide ban on cameras and audio access in their courtrooms at their trials, has made it difficult for a national audience to pay attention to any singular case. You know, before it was dropped, you know, President Trump's criminal case in Washington for election subversion was going to be invisible to the public, even though he was, at the time, a former president and private citizen. Even if the case persisted and continued, you wouldn't have heard it. You wouldn't have seen it. That impacts the public's attention, and I think you're seeing that with Judge Dugan. A clearly important case that will devour the nation's attention again at verdict is happening invisibly, which is why you have to have that body at the courthouse to tell you what's going on.
Can you take us into that morning meeting or that major meeting where they, for even if it's just 2 minutes, say, okay, this is coming up in Milwaukee. What are we going to do?
Yeah. And by the way, those meetings, you remember those meetings when you were in television news. They go for about an hour. I mean, you got to pace yourself in television editorial meetings and bring two cups of coffee. I think this is indistinguishable from its geography. It doesn't matter where in America this particular thing happened. You had a local judge arrested, handcuffed, perp walked, and photographed by the FBI, posted by the FBI director. It's a big deal. And it's also happening in a political epicenter. Wisconsin's always the center of politics. It's always the center of national eyes on how things are playing politically. And it's going to be interesting to see how all those pivotal voters next November in Wisconsin view anything, especially something like this.
Any chance you were flying back to Milwaukee for the verdict? You were here earlier.
If I could have my way, I'd be there right now. Covering the Trump administration is a high velocity, high octane practice, and we all stay like firemen on the fire pole, ready to slide down whenever there's breaking news. I would just say that May in Milwaukee is a very special time of year. I think perhaps people who don't live in our area don't see the charm in December the way they need to, the way they should, the way it's justified. It's just not the same people.
Okay,
fair enough.
Another big thing today in news, former special counsel Jack Smith is on Capitol Hill today for a closed-door interview with the House Judiciary Committee. He's discussing his pair of criminal investigations into President Trump. I know that you have seen parts of his statement. What is Smith's message?
Well, Smith's testifying behind closed doors, so no audio, no video of that either. I'm getting about tired of telling you about things we can't see and hear that are really important. But this is important. Jack Smith, of course, investigated Trump for election subversion and for the alleged classified records mishandling. He did both of those cases, both of which were dismissed, one by a judge, one by Smith himself. When Trump won re-election, you can't prosecute a sitting president. Argument he's making here is it was a righteous prosecution, that he was confident he was going to get a conviction, that the president's alleged crimes are why he took the case, not out of any political animus, and defending his techniques, tactics, and the way he brought this through the court system before dismissal. When you have a multi-hour interview with a congressional panel behind closed doors, there's a transcript that is created. I suspect that transcript will be released in a matter of days or weeks, but you also can be confident both sides behind closed doors politically are going to take excerpts of that transcript and highlight it for their own political ends. You cannot take the politics out of what Jack Smith did, even though Jack Smith is insistent what he was doing was not in itself political.
I know Trump told reporters in Washington today he supports the idea of an open hearing on this. Quote, I'd rather see him testify publicly. Is there any chance that that would ever actually happen?
There is a chance, but Jack Smith's the one who wants to be public, too. He said he wanted everything to be public so that he couldn't be clipped unfairly or taken out of context, which a lot of witnesses do prefer. It didn't go that way. The majority in the U.S. House, the Republican leaders on the committee, wanted to do this behind closed doors, making an argument that that's more the custom of how they do initial congressional investigations. I wouldn't rule out this happening publicly eventually if the majority party sees it worthwhile, which means If Republicans see that they have to do something to get Jack Smith in front of cameras, they'll do it this year or next. If Democrats win back the House next year, they could do it in 2027 and make this a public spectacle.
Expectations tonight for President Trump's live address to the nation?
Brief, efficient, as will the coverage, because this is happening in primetime television. For our purposes at CBS News, the night of the Survivor finale. So we'll carry the president's address. But I don't think you're going to see a lot of post-game analysis on network television, because the Survivor program is wildly popular across America and people do want to get back to it. I don't think it's going to be a long, unscripted affair, which so many Trump speeches are.
I was going to say, can the president be brief?
We're going to find out. as the song said when you brought me in, things can go on and on and on and on, and this could be one of them. See how I went full circle there for you, Adam?
I love that.
Very perceptive.
Yes. All right. Well, we'll find out tonight. That's CBS's Justice Correspondent, Scott McFarland. We always appreciate it. Scott, talk soon.
Thank you both.
It is 12:50. Okay, raise your hand if you know someone who is sick right now.
Raise your other hand
if you know two people who are sick right now.
Both hands up.
Oh, man, it is that time of the year, but it just feels like, I know we've got something going around here at 620 WTMJ. I asked News Director Tapua for some more Lysol.
Yep, both of our monitor spaces and our keyboards are thoroughly wiped here in the studios.
I do that any day, even when everybody's healthy. Yep. It's kind of like, we just have a lot of shared spaces here, so I think it's a good thing to do and just makes me feel better. but right now, it's like, it's a necessity. But the reason I ask about this is because there is something going around right now, and actually there are a couple things going on right now. But we are certainly not alone in this area. In fact, there is this school district down in Kansas. They have so many people out sick right now that they actually moved winter break up.
Okay,
they were like,
you know what?
Forget school.
School administrators in Dexter, Kansas, population 230, have closed schools until after the new year because of a high rate of illnesses, colds, and flu. The district's winter break was originally scheduled to begin December 22nd. More than a third of students in the district were out sick on Monday, as were several teachers and staff.
That's not an easy decision to make, to say, okay, I mean, that's at least, I don't know if they started this today or if it was yesterday, but that's at least 3 days that the kids are not in school that they were planning to be in school.
And for anyone throwing their hands up and saying, well, wait a minute, what about virtual learning? Didn't we learn all about this in 2020? Jim Krasula just said there, population 230. This is not some largest district in the state with the ability to just hand out iPads and laptops, probably. This is a very rural district having to navigate the issue in their own way.
Yeah, so hopefully those kiddos are home right now. They're getting some rest. They're staying healthy and not spreading it to the siblings and the parents.
Oh, right before the holidays, too. Like, and it happens every year without fail in December, it seems. It is the worst time. And yet every year we have to navigate this, it seems.